Magandang araw, Podmates! Our guest today is Professor Fatima Gao, an accomplished digital media researcher at UP Diliman's Department of Communication Research. She has been studying the spread of fake news, especially in the context of Philippine politics and history. Magandang araw sa iyo, Fatima. Welcome to my podcast.
Magandang araw sa lahat.
Okay, let's start with some definition of terms. Ano bang fake news ngayon? And is it still useful to use that term? And please allow me to explain where this question is coming from. Madalas mo kasing marinig sa ibang politiko, no? At saka sa ibang mga players sa politics natin. When they want to dismiss criticism or reports of wrongdoing, corruption, etc., sinasabi nilang fake news lang yan, no? Instead of addressing the criticism or the report, no? Minsan yung nagkakalat mismo ng fake news ang nagsasabi na ang balita na galing sa mainstream news media ay yung fake. So, ano ba itong inaaral mo na masasabi nating fake news?
Ang popular term na ginagamit nga ay fake news, no? At ito'y ginagamit to just throw around anybody you don't want to answer or be accountable to, right? In scholarship, in fact, yung tawag sa yung term na fake news ay isang oxymoron, because in the debate of news should always be true and factual, right? So the more technical term that is used, it's more encompassing. It's not just news but other forms of deceitful content is in fact called disinformation. Mm-hmm. Now there are three criteria to what we consider as disinformation. First is that, you know, it contains falsehood or distortion of facts. Second is that it can harm, you know, society in particular ways, especially in the context of, you know, democracies. And the last one that is distinct for disinformation and not misinformation is the intent to harm. And that's harder to prove because intent is something that, you know, you need to interrogate, right? You know, you need to ask the perpetrator, did you intend to falsify this or to be deceitful in this manner? But there are a lot of indicators, not even, you know, from the peddlers of disinformation, but from data that would indicate this is actually a coordinated and manufactured activity that would prove the intent of the peddler of disinformation. So yun yung criteria natin. The intent is the important common ground that makes something to be tagged as disinformation.
Okay, well, importanteng clarification yan, no? Kasi madalas mo rin marinig kapag magkamali. Kasi a lot of errors by anyone, is, you know, including professional journalists, nagkakamali din. Sasabihin ng mga kritiko na ayan, nagkakalat ng fake news, no? Kahit yung misspelling lang ng pangalan or typo, kahit kinorek, no? So hindi 'yon ang sinasabi mong disinformation, kasi hindi naman 'yan sinasadya, kinokorek naman at madalas nag-apologize pa yung nagkamali. Pero yung disinformation, dahil sinasabi mo nga, it's intentional, no one's apologizing for that, right? It's usually not being taken back and, you know, hindi yan basta binabawi.
Oo, yung sabi mo kanina na nagiging politicized na yung use ng fake news, it's just used to deflect accountability or questioning or scrutiny from, you know, media, from regulators, kung may regulators man, who can, you know, who understands the disinformation environment we have. Definitely, yun na ngayon nangyayari ngayon. In fact, in scholarship, may tinatawag na, you know, fake news, yung pseudo-journalistic practice, yun yung nakita natin na content na kumakalat. And meron na rin, you know, politicizing of fake news. And we've heard recent news for perhaps listeners of the podcast, of certain politicians saying that they're victims of fake news, right? And the thing is, anybody can say that and no one seems to verify anymore, because the disinformation environment we have also operates in a very polarized political environment. So, hindi lang siya yung content, kundi yung context to where it spreads. That's why one lie, one falsehood is not really gonna destroy democracy, not gonna impede our, you know, election process, but because it's so much lie and people are susceptible to it, they are now more open to believing conspiratorial or even, you know, fringe narratives that might not be common sense anymore, but because they are predisposed to that, they are more susceptible to believing and spreading.
I was reading some of your articles, no, na nanlubas sa popular media. sa internet. And at the beginning of the pandemic, you wrote that fake news is like a virus, no? Please explain, no? Why did you compare fake news to a virus at particularly a crucial time nung kumakalat pa lang yung pandemic?
We know in other parts of the world, especially in the US, there are a lot of movements that are spreading misinformation in the context of health, medical information and science. And in an ideal world, COVID could be addressed more efficiently if people are more receptive to scientific information and listening to experts and scientists and doctors. But because there's this other problem that the World Health Organization actually acknowledged as infodemic, there's that, you know, it's a bundle of problems. There's a pandemic, the virus is spreading. There's also the virus of false information spreading. And I think why it's called the virus, I guess why I use the metaphor of a virus to describe this information as a crisis, is because it's really social in nature. Because there are people you trust, even if they don't have the expertise or the credentials to claim, I can talk about COVID vaccines, for instance, even if I'm not a doctor, but I trust this person. There's that dynamic of, you know, I believe not necessarily in the, you know, institutional authority of this person, but because of our social relationship. That's why when you're surrounded by people who are more susceptible to this information, more likely you will be more open because you trust these people. So iba na yung concepto or I guess notion natin ng trust nowadays. We know that there's a lot of anti-media populist rhetoric being thrown around by the state, by other actors. There's anti-science promoters out there. So in the context where there's heightened distrust of institution, where do you seek information? It's in the alternative sources, which are not people who can really vouch for this information, but they do are out there and, you know, are quite popular, in fact, because of that, you know, social capital they have online.
Dito sa konteksto rin ng pandemya, no, parang may nakita akong irony dito na you compared fake news nga to a virus, no? And you know, after the pandemic was declared, nag-lockdown sa Metro Manila and all over the world, most people were basically spending a lot more time in front of screens, no? So may nakita ka rin bang irony dito na you know people were safer from COVID viral infection, but were actually became more vulnerable to the virus that is fake news because they were spending so much time in front of screens.
Yes. So we are always at home, as you mentioned. Therefore, our access to that part of reality outside of our homes is impeded. No, there's a hindrance to actually confirm if something is really happening. That's one of the reasons why it's difficult for somebody who's not exposed to that, to what's happening outside of their homes, to confirm it's really true because they don't have access to those events, to those activities. So they rely on other testimonials out there. If somebody says 50,000 attendees yung pumunta sa rally ng isang politician, it's really hard to verify if you're just at home, correct? So there's that, less sources out there for you to confirm particular events. So there's that. Wala kang personal experience, kumbaga, to claim na, ay, oo, totoo, I was there, nakita ko siya. Mm-hmm. The disinformation environment is fueled by a lot of money and there's a whole machinery out there. So kung nood ka na nood ng video, eventually, kahit nanood ka ng mainstream media, darating ka dun sa mga content na possibly problematic or may disinformation. Kasi, yun nga, naubusan lang content out there at eventually, pupunta ka dun sa mga, conspiratorial content. And I say this because I've seen this happen in my research as well, and how ultimately these disinformation peddlers are in fact really masters of the platform. Even if, you know, true and verified information are out there, it's not appearing in the top search results, for instance, because they're not able to leverage the affordance of the platform. Yung mga influencer na to, kunyari sa YouTube, tumataas sila sa search ranking dahil alam nila na para makita ako, maging visible ako sa YouTube, I know how to play, you know, how to, you know, label my video, how to put the description, what hashtags to use, etc. All those makes you more competitive in the economy of information online.
Well, of course, many of us noticed a lot of the falsehoods about COVID that went around, partly because there was a vacuum then, no? Especially early on in reliable information, and even scientists didn't really know much about it, no? But something happened that kind of gives me a little bit of hope, no? Na pwede pa rin makorrect yung mga kumakalat na falsehood, no? Kasi early on, there was a lot of anti-vax disinformation, falsehoods, you know, magiging zombie ka kung magpabakuna, etc. And, you know, the early surveys on vaccination showed that a very low acceptance rate, no, or very few people, or low percentage of people who were surveyed said that they would allow themselves to be vaccinated. But now, the vast majority have been vaccinated. In other words, na-overcome din itong, you know, this ecosystem of disinformation na kumakalat, yung mga conspiracy theories about vaccines. There were other factors that made people accept vaccination, and partly that's partly the reason why, you know, we're able to circulate a lot more now, and fewer people are dying, fewer people are getting infected, kasi nga ang dami nang nagpabakuna. Whereas there was some pessimism early last year na kahit magkaroon tayo ng supply ng vaccines, baka kokoonti lang magpapabakuna, no? So to what do you attribute that? Was there an influx naman of parang competing, you know, YouTube channels or Facebook pages that were correcting, you know, the conspiracy theories? Or was there, you know, also a combination of, you know, more scientific information and maybe public policy and certain limitations to, you know, impose on people who were not vaccinated, for example?
I think in general, in an environment with high certainty, there is more susceptibility to disinformation. As we know more about the virus, as we know more about the solutions to viruses, especially with the public policy abroad, what's effective, lockdown ba, or, you know, vaccination, a combination of that. We learn more, there's more certainty to, you know, the end of the tunnel, how we can solve this pandemic. And we know that it's vaccination. So that happened, no? There's more certainty, there's more vouching from experts, from even from ordinary people who have vaccinated themselves, and then you see that online, then you are encouraged to do so. That's the thing. This information is responsive to the dynamics of the environment as well. In the context of health, where certain information or, you know, scientific proof can be given, that perhaps is something that can hinder the spread of this information. Definitely, meron pa rin mga anti-vaxxers, pero hindi naman sila ganun magiging ka-resonant if, you know, they're not, there's evidence in media and there's social movement already to support vaccination. The policies of the government for example, economic incentives are in fact a driver to that. I can't say the same for political disinformation, because mm-hmm. it's a different arena altogether, where you can't really, even if there's documentary evidence of lying and disinformation, it's still not scientific. And it doesn't really concern you personally, at least yung vaccine at virus, alam mo na, baka mahawa ako, pwede akong magkasakit. Mm-hmm. Pero yung political disinformation, you're not directly affected. Of course, technically speaking, in a democracy, in an election especially, affected ka talaga. It's the future of your country. Pero, you know, it's not as tangible as the vaccine. So, iba rin yung character when it comes to disinformation in different arenas. Health information and politics are quite different animals.
Okay, magkaiba silang arena, but you can also, can't you also apply the itong principle of certainty and, you know, preponderance of evidence doon sa politics din and history, kasi, or even more recent history, you know, I mean, okay, martial law medyo matagal na, no, pero even in terms of the drug war, no, may nagde-deny pa rin na maraming, you know, na may state involvement doon sa mga pinatay, etc, no. So bakit ganon? Sabi mo nga, you know, there was a, you know, nagkaroon ng certainty because of, you know, the scientific knowledge and research, etc. But dito naman sa politika, you know, there have been Supreme Court cases already that show, you know, about ill-gotten wealth, for example, during the Marcos regime, and yet marami pa rin ayaw maniwala, no? So bakit ganun?
So makita natin yan na nagsimula, at least in the context of, you know, Marcos regime and the revisionist history that comes with it, nagsimula yan after 2016 when Marcos Jr. lost the election. And in our study, I really saw that there's a lot of these revisionist narratives, from outright denialism that, you know, martial law was, you know, the atrocities of martial law didn't happen, to distortion. Martial law is something that is justified. In fact, because the communism was spreading in Southeast Asia, Marcos had to do this. May mga ganong videos out there. At how we see this happening, despite the evidence, I think one, the first thing that we need to establish here is really the heightened distrust of media, heightened distrust of historians, scholars, all those, you know, institutions that protect people from undue influence. And we can see in this video na two-punch strategy talaga yung ginagawa ng mga purveyors of this information. They first discredit the institution that gives the evidence, and then they say na it's actually a big cover-up of the media, of the political elites, of the even then national media was, you know, implicated in this big conspiracy, supposedly. Therefore, I am doing my own research. That's always the line of people who are susceptible to disinformation. I'm doing my own research, and I've seen that there are other evidences out there. So, ito yun na nga nangyayari. Nagkakaroon na ng counter-evidence, kumbaga, yung other side nung camp. And when you think about it, when you actually, I guess, examine the evidence, it's just a website, no? Tapos may fabricated, you know, photos lang. Pero for them, dahil merong artifact, kahit fabricated din yun, merong ebidensya na pwedeng ipakita. Because ang nangyayari ngayon, kahit may ebidensya sa Supreme Court, kahit sa history books, kahit may mga testimonials of actual victims of martial law, for instance, meron ding may ipakita yung kabila. So ready na yung, you know, yung Marcos camp, basically, to claim na, ah, meron kaming counter sa inyo. At it takes years to build this, you know, information ecosystem. So, of course, discredit. I don't want to use alternative per se, kasi alternative refers to more grassroots media. But, you know, in this context, let's say, they have created nga this alternative information ecosystem that gives them an alternative reality of what happened that time. So, when you watch one video about, you know, a revisionist narrative about the Marcos regime, maybe it's not believable, but because there's hundreds of them, perhaps thousands already, and they're racking thousands and millions of views, it becomes more believable. In the comment section of YouTube, for instance, makita mo na, ah, totoo yan, sabi ng lolo ko, ganyan. So it's there's a corroborative aspect to the lies. One lie plus one lie plus one lie, it becomes, you know, the truth. If you're just exposed to that ecosystem, and since nasira na yung tiwala mo sa mainstream media and institutions, it's, you know, more likely to engage in this. And I think the third one that I will point out that makes these disinformation tactics really effective is because these influencers, these content creators, are creating content that is accessible to the people, you know, in Filipino siya, even, you know, in the local language, they are presented in ways na hindi siya, you know, hindi siya nakaka-insecure, kasi, you know, you're not talking to a scholar, you're just talking to someone who just did their research, quote unquote, no? So I think that accessibility, and even, you know, the relationship they have with that influencer, they've been watching the influencer for a long time, make them trustworthy, even if wala silang talagang, you know, credibility or authority to talk about history.
Bigla na lang parang almost overnight parang na mainstream na sila. Ito na yung normal thinking ng maraming tao. And ako, I came to that belief na nasa margins lang yan, and yung mainstream thinking ay yung galing din sa mainstream media, dahil ang tingin ko naman marami na ring information na lumabas na based on historical research, based on documentary research, may mga pelikula ng lumabas. You know, there's a bantayog ng mga bayani that commemorates, you know, human rights victims. There's been compensation to human rights victims. And every year, pag may, you know, important date, like assassination, you know, Aquino or martial law anniversary, or I mean, there's been an effort to, you know, remember, memorialize. So parang ako, isa ako dun sa mga nagulat na bakit ang dami ngayon hindi naniniwala doon sa ganong klaseng information na ipinalalabas, lalo na sa mainstream media, all of these decades, no? So ganun na ba kalaki in such a short period of time, no? Yung influence nitong mga nagkakalat ng sinasabi mga revisionist history.
May mga different apparatuses that strengthen what is spreading online. Even if we are doing all these commemorative activities, especially in the administration of President Duterte, the remembering of EDSA, for instance, it's been written by historians. For instance, the work of Leloy Claudio, he really talks about the stripping of importance of the commemoration of EDSA. In fact, I think, and in one of the chapters of the books I've read, written by Leloy, he said that the commemoration was not anymore in the Banday ng mga Bayani, it's in a military camp somewhere. And so, nare-resignify what EDSA means and its, you know, centrality in our history. I've written about this. The bill commemorating Marcos's birthday as Marcos Day, it didn't pass, I think. There was resistance online about it. But the fact that there's state effort to, you know, make Marcos nga look like a hero, like he's an, you know, worthy individual, and there's that other aspect of, you know, the symbolic practices that we try to remember EDSA and then martial law and then its victims. There's that tandem. There's this information happening online. There's this state effort to erase or, you know, discredit EDSA. And I'm not sure of this. I haven't seen like the actual evidence. I've seen commentaries about how the mainstream media is somehow complicit to this because they've glamorized the Marcoses as another political family. Maybe, of course, not you know, our journalists. Maybe the entertainment media is more the ones who have helped the Marcoses, you know, rehabilitate their name. So there's a lot of effort, not just disinformation. Kaya nga mas potent yung disinformation online dahil marami nangyari from elsewhere. Ito yung sinasabi ko na nako-confirm nila. Yung napanood ko sa YouTube, totoo pala yun kasi na-confirm ko elsewhere in another source. And I think nakakalungkot man na i-admit na sabi mo nga na we're caught off guard. You know, all of a sudden it was, you know, mainstream. I think because we let it in its fringe, you know, state, maliit pa siya, konti pa lang sila, and we didn't really address it, dun lumaki, dun naging mas powerful yung disinformation environment. We dismiss isa at mga troll lang yan, you know, konti lang sila. But all of a sudden, they're so big. And again, I'm saying all of this in the context of the money that's poured into this. No, and this is the biggest problem talaga because it's underground, it's under the table negotiations. You know, the influencers we see online, we thought na organic naman yan talagang, you know, they're really supporters of the Marcoses. I would argue that a lot of them are really paid for. And I heard from, you know, other journalists that I've talked to, you know, an influencer for Marcos in this political arena is paid $300,000 a month. The economic incentive to participate in this economy is so big. So there's that, you know, economic industry as well that supports this ecosystem, that makes it thrive.
Oh, yun din ang field of study ni Jonathan Ong, di ba? Yung architects of disinformation. But give us some examples of some of the more viral and maybe outrageous na falsehoods na kumakalat.
Sige, I can speak for the study I've done with Dr. Cheryl Soriano from De La Salle. We studied nga the historical disinformation on the Marcos regime. There's a lot. This is the most outrageous, I guess. Maybe the more fringe Marcos videos are the ones claiming this. Ito yung sinasabi nila na pag nanalo si Marcos, Marcos Jr., he would claim the deposit in World Bank or, you know, some international banking apparatus. Yung mga tinago ni Marcos na pera doon in gold, perhaps, kuhunin niya yun at i-distribute sa buong Pilipinas. So that's the promise, no? And I've heard this around. It's not anymore just limited to online videos. In fact, nakikita, narinig ko na sa mga barabarangay, nag-spread na rin yung kwento na yon. So I think that's one of the most outrageous that, you know, ultimately, kung nagnakaw man sila, ibabalik nila. And you know, it would, you know, make the Philippines a more equitable state.
Just to play devil's advocate here, I mean, that's a campaign promise. Now, you hear that from politicians all the time. Can we say that's fake news? I mean, it could, you know, malay mo, gagawin niya talaga. I mean, we don't know, di ba? We don't, and daming naniwala na si President Duterte mag-jet ski, di ba, sa West Philippine Sea until he didn't do it, di ba? Why should we think that's so outrageous when, yun nga, marami rin naniwala na mayaman sila at malay mo, talaga mamimigay sila ng pera pag nanalo sila?
First of all, marami nang fact check nito na wala naman silang account doon, wala namang gintong amount of money na deposit sa isang Swiss account. So, maraming ganong facts na. Tapos, I guess nagiging outrageous siya when coupled with the other story. The reason why marami silang pera na deposit abroad is because Marcos was a lawyer for this mythical Filipino clan, Taliano clan, right? Mm-hmm. And they paid Marcos in gold. That's why Marcos was so rich. So that erases the idea na, ill-gotten wealth, mayaman naman talaga sila. So, ayun yung sinasabi ko na ano siya, yung bundle of lies that makes it so believable. Kasi, you know, us Filipinos, we also like entertaining stories, right? So, the more we embellish, the more these political narratives are embellished. Even if it's fabricated or gawa-gawa lang, fictional, it still resonates. And I think, when you study it not on a content basis, yung pakita mo nga yung buong ecosystem, makikita mo na yung lies kasi about the Marcos regime, meron talagang mga parang borderline, you know, distortionism lang. So, dun yung entrance mo to the ecosystem until you reach the more fringe ideas. So, yung mga outrageous lies that we hear are those that are not, you know, a lot. Pero may mga lies na in between na, you know, a person, it's the gateway, kumbaga, to make you believe. And when you watch one video that says, you know, the Marcos says, the economic progress of the Philippines during the Marcos era is like this. Okay, pwede sigurong paisip kung hindi ka marunong mag-compare ng mga, you know, dollar exchange rate. Yung claim na, you know, 4 pesos lang yung dollar exchange rate dati. Therefore, we were quite competitive. Yun yung pwede mong gateway to these kinds of disinformation. Pero yun nga, yung mga outrageous ones, you can definitely reach that if you watch this video. We are the most active social media users in the world for 6 years now. And nag-hyperdrive siya nung pandemic dahil nasa bahay nga lang tayo and we're really looking for information. I think we need to look at this information as a complex system talaga na hindi lang siya, you know, isang lie after the other.
You're a digital media researcher, no? You didn't start out focusing on the Marcoses, di ba? Yung pro-Marcos networks, no? Nagkataon lang may mga na-discover ka mga networked pages and influencers, etc. No? But are there disinformation networks favoring other candidates? And how do they compare in scale, content, and strategies?
I think before we forget, you know, natin outgoing na si President Duterte. So Duterte talaga yung primary mover ng disinformation ecosystem. In fact, ngayon that Marcos is the one running as the president, he's actually benefiting from the established disinformation ecosystem by President Duterte. These networks, supposedly the platforms have addressed this. Some of them may mga tinakedown na silang content, may tinakedown na silang mga accounts, pero it's not enough because again, you can always create new ones even if may mga na takedown. So strong hold kumbaga Duterte yung disinformation ecosystem from 2016 pa. And primarily this is happening on Facebook. But ngayon si Marcos nga sa nasa YouTube siya primarily nagfo-focus. And this is because YouTube kasi para siyang TV, no? And Filipinos are heavy TV users, so it makes sense na yun doon siya mag-focus ng investment. Ngayon, speaking of the other candidates, the thing is hindi pa scope ng study namin ngayon. Inaaral siya ng isang colleague ko, hindi pa namin ma-release yung result because we need to be, you know, very sure that it's happening. But what I know is the fact that almost all candidates use trolls, use disinformation apparatuses. We don't know how big they are. what we see, for instance, for Lenny supporters online, it's really mostly organic in a sense that we know there's no indicators of disinformation or coordinated activity. For Eskomo rin, no, there might be indicators of that. May mga lumabas na mga bagong YouTube channel in support of him, for instance. But the thing is, I think we need to make an analytical distinction also. Ano ba yung disinformation? Ano yung propaganda? So it's harder to do that, to prove that. Kasi disinformation nga, ang proof natin ay yung talagang content. But the platforms have a different definition nga. Pag coordinated inauthentic activity yung nangyayari, yung sabay-sabay nagpo-post, tapos pare-parehas yung sinasabi, parang spam, spammy kumbaga. That's also a basis to say disinformation.
But not enough basis to say it's propaganda. Ano, paano mo din i-define ang propaganda sa kontekstong ito?
Yung disinformation is a kind of propaganda, but propaganda is necessarily lie. Parang wali naman siya falsehood, distortion. Pwede, pero it's more of framing things in a particular way. So kung may toolbox yung mga propagandists, disinformation is one of them. Kung baga, it's important to think about, you know, disinformation as only one of the many ways that politicians manipulate public opinion.
Malaking factor to, no? Obviously, influencing people's worldview and understanding of history. But how would you compare disinformation, itong network disinformation spreaders, how would you compare them with other factors that influence people's thinking? For example, nabanggit mo si Leloy Claudio, who has a doctorate. He's a professional historian. He now teaches at Berkeley, at one of the top universities in America. Obviously, may influence sa thinking mo. But how would you compare, for example, someone like that, na talagang malalim yung research versus yung influence itong mga kumakalat? I mean, that's kind of almost a silly question. No? The answer is obvious. But how about things like, mainstream media, for example, na, you know, kami, nasa mainstream media, we've always had this kind of proud attitude na, you know, importante yung role namin sa lipunan. And all of a sudden, parang, yun nga, nadidemonize kami, you know, yun nga, our trust in our institution, in our integrity, in our honesty has been undermined, etc. No? So, ito na ba yung pinaka-influential na factor ngayon sa pagbuo ng world yun na maraming tao, yung mga napapanood nila sa YouTube, yung mga lumalabas sa news feed nila, as opposed to things that happen in the real world, or as opposed to books, what they hear in the classroom, you know, what they hear from people like you?
I think one of the reasons why there's distrust in institutions, and scholars, and media practitioners is because it's almost classed in nature. So may class factor dito. Yung resentment of the lower socioeconomic classes to the ruling elite and the institutions represent somehow the ruling elites, right? There's that, you know, ambivalence. Do I trust you? You're not really advancing my interests. You're protecting the interests of those of the powerful. So there's that. And yun nga, since na-plant na yung seed, na hindi nga katiwa-tiwala yung mga institutions natin, you really would veer away from mainstream media. There's also the rise of, other media outlets that really have clear partisan slant. Of course, I wouldn't name them here, but we know that, you know, because they can call themselves a legitimate media organization because they have, you know, they have an office, they have registered sila na media talaga, and they clearly have a political stance, and they could be spreading this information too to a certain extent because of that advancement of their agenda. There's also that alternative, you know, sources of information. I think there's also a problem talaga of media literacy. It's the way, I know media literacy is taught already in schools, right? We have teachers really dedicated to teaching media literacy. I think the problem is in the operation. I've heard a lot of scholars say na yung mga media literacy teacher, actually computer science teacher sila. Alam mo yun, hindi siya yung, you know, quality of information, that's more of access. How to access, how to use the computer, how to use a browser. It's not really the analytical side of things, it's the technical side of things that we're trying to teach. And that's what we lack, no? Paano ba natin ma-discern ano yung trustworthy information online? And hindi tinuturo to sa schools. Siguro tinatouch on, pero it's not something that is mastered. And I think the more susceptible audience also, the older population, because digital media is something new to them. Akala nila yung mga pinapag nila sa YouTube. Parang TV lang, alam mo yun? Parang isang episode lang na 24 oras. And I think, ito, i-promote ko na yung research ko rin na ginagawa. There's really a lot of content creators out there who try to mimic media also. They try to like put a headline, may banner, they have guests. So, hindi pa namin alam yung actual tawag namin dun sa mga influencer na ito. Pero they try to also try to mimic the authority of journalists and, you know, claim themselves as the new gatekeepers. So, marami talagang factor bakit tayo na-open up sa gintong political reality na very fragmented. It's not any, we're not anymore sharing this same same truths, kumbaga. And it's something that we need to accept. I guess as journalists, as scholars, na this is happening, and ultimately this is systemic. It's not the fault of the audiences talaga eh. I know most of the time we hear a lot of conversation na kasi bobo yung ano yung viewers natin, nila magets na ito false story, you know, niloko lang sila. It's ultimately not their fault. It's a concerted effort years back. And ultimately, yung mga na-seed na disinformation ecosystem since 2016, parang nag-ROI na siya ngayong 2022. Yeah. 6 years from now, ano na siya, nag-grow na yung investment nila. It's really hard to fight that because years and years of disinformation versus just, you know, a couple of months before the election, ngayon walang ina-address to, it's not gonna make the cut. So, it's a tall order.
Masasabi mo bang isa tayo sa mga nangunguna rin dito sa pagkalat o yung pag-pioneer ng mga techniques, technologies pagdating sa disinformation?
A lot of reports actually label the Philippines as, you know, patient zero of this information crisis globally. And whatever the, you know, strategies and tactics executed in the US election, sa Brexit campaign, nauna na yan sa Pilipinas. Parang ito yung experimentation, tayo ang ginipi. Big ng disinformation operations. And there's really a lot of that still because it's really profitable as an industry, as you know. So yes, we are, I think, nanguna. Kung may number one tayo sa anumang larangan, unfortunately, ito yun. And I think it's not just how bad the problem is, it's also the labor involved in doing this because labor is cheap in the Philippines. Marami tayong mga, you know, call center dito na ganun yung klase ng trabaho na ginagawa. So may both the, you know, the labor side of things, the supply chain side of things, and also the demand side of things. Tayo yung number one sa aspect na yon, and I think we should have nga a global voice because of that. So this problem of the historical disinformation, for instance, na inaaral namin, nireason namin to sa platforms 3 years ago. Sabi nila, investigan namin, sige. Pero wala nangyari. Wala namang na-take down na platform, na channel o video. We need to start demanding talaga from the platforms. And I think it also starts with, you know, a competent government to say na, as a government, we're, you know, putting our foot down and saying na, our democracy is really in shambles because of the effects of disinformation circulating in social media.
Well, of course, that's not going to be done by a government that benefits from this information. So depende rin kung sino yung nakaupo dyan, ano. Sabi mo nga, nire-research mo pa yung extent ng problema, still trying to get to the bottom of it. But at the same time, you know enough to be able to suggest a cure for this problem. Ano yun?
I think we need to say this outright. The solution to this is multifaceted. It's not just the journalists doing fact-checking. It's not just the civil society doing media literacy campaigns. So, unahin ko na yung fact-checking kasi yun yung parang top-of-mind solution. Fact-checking works because they create sources or actually references na may mga information yung mali out there. So kung gusto mo malaman as, you know, as a student or as an individual na totoo kaya to, I can just Google at na-check na pala ng verifiable. So okay na yan, na fact-check na yan, I believe that. Pero yung limitation lang ng fact-checking is that there are certain people who are not anymore open to fact-checking content. So I think it only works for particular audiences who still believe in media, who still, you know, really subscribe subscribe to the idea na that media is to be trusted when it comes to fact. Of course, media literacy campaign are the ones that we hear a lot, especially for young people. So as I mentioned, it's the technical literacy that's being taught. It's not really the analytical part of things to discern what is true, what is falsehood online. So I think we need to double down on that. What are the indicators that might inform me that, you know, this is a problematic or suspicious kind of content? Another solution would be the platforms really acting on this. I think, you know, madali kasi yung frameworks ng content moderation ng platforms, very Western-centric. Kunyari, alt-right content. And ano naman tayong alt-right dito? Diba? Iba yung klase ng, you know, disinformation perpetrators dito. Hindi siya yung... hindi siya ideological, kumbaga, no? Iba yung motivation. In fact, very patronage system nga. So, we need to demand from them. You need to adjust your policies and your definitions of what counts as disinformation in the Philippine context because it doesn't address that. And a subset of that solution is perhaps you developing, you know, algorithms to detect Filipino as a language. Not even Filipino, baka Cebuana rin, the major languages in the Philippines, to detect that. Kasi ngayon, yung algorithms ng Facebook, ng YouTube, lahat yan English. So, kung Filipino yung ano, lengguwahe na ginagamit ng mga fake information na to, fake videos na to, malamang hindi siya ma-detect, di ba? So, may mga ganung limitations din on the platform level. Yun yung mga like top of mind, but ultimately, I think, yun nga, yeah, I'm a researcher doing algorithmic research as well. Very automated na kasi the way naku-curate yung mga information online. I think salient na siya enough na aware na yung mga tao na totoo nga na possible na may mga kanyang circle lang tayo online. One of the things we need to work on is perhaps really breaking through that, you know, that quote-unquote echo chamber. It's difficult to say because in theory, technically, o di kailangan kang maging friends yung mga, you know, supporters ng kabilang side or ng other politicians, ng kandidato. Pero, you know, there's also this dissonance kasi na ano, bakit kayo friend yan? Na-stress lang ako pag nakita ko yung mga post nila. Unfriend ko na lang yan, do-block ko na lang yan. So, yung homophily, yung dinatawag na term doon, yung like-minded affiliation, ano siya, human nature din talaga siya. So, I think, again, systemic talaga yung problem. Dapat yung platforms din addresses the algorithms din. Actually, may mga naisip na yung Facebook na solusyon, how to, you know, manage the polarization online. For instance, meron silang mga ino-on na mechanisms sa algorithm nila to, for example, privilege or, you know, make more visible yung mga media outlets sa newsfeed, for instance. So may mga affirmative action, kumbaga, na ginagawa. Pero pag election lang, tapos turn off na nila, di balik na naman tayo sa normal business. So, I think yung economic incentive kasi ng mga platforms, ganun talaga, you know, we only care for the attention and not really for the social condition of our users in different countries where they belong to. So, yun yung nakita kong solusyon. Piecemeal pa siya ngayon. Hindi pa rin makita yung overall framework, how they work together. Maybe tanungin mo ako next year, baka may solusyon na tayo kung we have a better understanding of the problem. But I think if I were to, you know, emphasize the studies of Jason Cabanyas and Jonathan Ong, it's really the industry that we need to investigate first. Kung, you know, kung makita mo sila na, okay, ito industry, ma-pinpoint ko sino yung mga accountable, baka it there's a chance na mabawasan nga yung kumakalat na disinformation out there. Incentives are so high now, there really is no way to crack down on them. So, ang hirap, kasi sabi mo nga yung government, dapat yung gumagawa ng solusyon dito, pero sila nag-benefit. So, sana sa you know, after May, magkaroon tayo ng gobyerno na really is serious in tackling this problem because it really undermines the social fabric of our society.
Ako, talagang natural believer ako sa evidence, facts, you know, the importance of journalism and all of that, no? At ikaw, of course, itong mga nabanggit mo na mga pangalan na researchers din, mga academics, we're all part of the same echo chamber, no? Yung mga kailangan na makarinig nitong mga sinasabi mo ay baka hindi ka nila marinig, no? Dahil nga nandito tayo sa, you know, the media outlets where you choose to write, no? The journals that you where your articles are found in, hindi yan pinupuntahan. Hindi, you know, the algorithms do not lead all of these voters or all of these people who are influenced by itong mga perpetrators ng disinformation, they're not places that they would go to. Any thoughts on how to connect with these people? Obviously, marami ka ng insights and findings na dapat nga ma-share, no? Beyond this podcast and beyond, you know, the other outlets that you where you appear, no? How can you penetrate these? Because I'm sure that's a problem that many are also wrestling with.
Yung isang pwedeng solusyon na ginagawa na ng ibang mga activists, ibang mga grupo out there, ginagaya nila yung itsura ng disinformation material, pero yung laman niya ay true information, factual information. So napaka-creative nun, no? And I think that's really effective because yung kumbaga yung aesthetic ng disinformation, that really is like a kumbaga clickbait. Baka agaw ng attention ng isang viewer who's susceptible to disinformation and would want to watch that. Another one is, I think our institutions need to really step up their game in making content, scientific evidence, journalistic evidence, research yan, accessible to the public in formats that is something that they would watch while eating, while, you know, in the MRT. So, hindi tayo dapat nasa pedestal na, you know, kasi ganito yung ginagawa ng journalist, ganito yung ginagawa ng historia, sa libro lang siya. Perhaps it's time to make content forms that is accessible to them. And yun nga, it's a mastery of the platforms too. Knowing na what tags to use, how to optimize, we have to use the right cover photo, all of those things. Pero it really is one of the factors that would make us visible in those circles and arenas where we might not be accessible in the first place. I guess a concrete example, yung mga National Historical Commission videos, hindi na enough para i-upload lang yung documentary doon. Hindi siya papanoorin. Kailangan talaga native to the platform. And this is very specific ha, to the platform. Kung TikTok man yan, or YouTube, or Facebook, dapat yung, ang tawag platform vernacular, yung native na style, native na itsura ng content, native na kultura dun sa platform na yun, dun dapat ka nag-a-adjust. Para makita ka ng mga tao na, you know, na pwedeng panoorin yung mga content mo. So what I'm saying now, yung to burst the bubble, or to penetrate the echo chamber, seems to be very out there. Pero we really need creative solutions because we're in a fight against an algorithm. I mean, yung algorithm, nagpo-function lang siya in the interest of getting more attention, getting more hours of viewing or, you know, scrolling in the newsfeed. It doesn't care if you consume disinformation or propaganda as long as you're still watching.
Balikan ko lang yung isang point na napag-usapan natin kanina, yung pandemic lockdown, you know, kept people at home in front of their screens and it maaring na-accelerate nga yung spread ng disinformation kasi walang ibang ginagawa yung mga tao. Ano? But now, alert level 1, lumalabas na yung mga tao. You can, dito sa political campaign season natin, ang lalaki ng rally. And hindi ito online. These are real world rallies where people are talking, interacting, listening to, you know, candidates in the flesh, etc. No? Ano yung posibleng impact nito on people's thinking kahit na condition na sila for all, you know, for at least for the past 2 years ng mga napapanood nila?
I think we need to think about voters in many categories. Talagang may mga all-out supporters, the ones really going out and rallies, even if it's hot, even if it's, you know, would take them a long time standing. There's that, you know, passionate supporter talaga. And they seem to be a lot, right? From the photos we see online, from the reports. And the thing is, the majority of voters are not really those that would be categorized as those passionate supporters. Majority would just go to the polling, you know, on May 9. Parang hindi sila super sold on somebody. They just have a preference right now. Iba yung supporters sa preference, you know, di ba? I prefer somebody, I can change my mind. Pero speaking of, you know, the opportunity to change people's mind or preference, you know, face to face, that's a possibility. And the thing is, if this information is all about trust, all about social relationship, that can happen offline as well. It really happens within your immediate circle. You don't go to a stranger and change their mind. It happens organically in your own community, in your own family, if you encounter this, there are a lot of testimonial na nakapag-change talaga sila ng mind ng tito nila o nung nanay nila, sinong boboto, right? Majority of the Filipinos are, you know, they prefer someone, but they're not yet the converted, you know, supporter na I'll campaign for you. And that's what we need to think about. How would we convince the rest na, you know, lukewarm preference, lukewarm support. I am believer na it's really in the face-to-face, really relationship building with these people.
So what do you tell your students and other young people who are growing up in this kind of environment?
I'm very hopeful sa Gen Z na mga students natin dahil I think sila naman yung aware na nangyayari ito. It's not as if ignorante sila sa echo chamber, sa disinformation. I think whenever we have this discussion in our class, parang ikaw, nahuloko talaga sila. Anong gagawin natin? Wala na. Parang, wala na. Uwian na. Kasi it's the monster is so big. I can't really grasp how to fight the enemy. Pero, I think, ini-encourage ko sila na kasi kailangan natin nga mag-research more. I mean, as a researcher, yun talaga yung number one na sa solution ko. We need to research more and publicize our research. So, it's a call also for scholars na nag-aaral ng disinformation or propaganda or online culture na baka panahon na para, you know, to make our research more accessible, and we need the help of our media partners to translate this to us. So ako, alam ko, di ba yung mga media interviews na to, wala naman tong labor to for us, you know, on top of our other responsibilities. But I think it's our obligation to, na hindi lang kami nag-research for research sake, but also to contribute to the solutions to social problems we have like disinformation.
I just want to share a reflection, you know, as I read your articles about disinformation, falsehoods, lies, fake news, etc. No, it kind of filled me with dread. I felt like I was on a train that's headed for a wreck, and there was nothing I could do about it. It's taking a toll on people's mental health, no? And I wanted to ask you a personal question. How do you maintain a balance when you think about this much, much more than most people? And I'm sure, you know, this is not a happy subject. I guess you're like a researcher who researches cancer, but, you know, people die of cancer, no? So, but people need to study cancer to produce a solution or a cure. No? How do you deal with the you know, the dreadful side of this subject matter? And does it take a toll on you as well?
I think I just want to affirm your feelings. You're not alone in this. Everybody feels that there's information seems to be an existential problem. Like climate change, na it really fills you with dread and misery that, you know, I can't really pinpoint how to address this. And whenever I'm asked, you know, how do we solve this? What can I do? It's hard to answer because it's not your fault. I mean, you can do something, but, you know, it's really a systematic problem. And I think that, one of the reasons why I'm still motivated to still study this, even if it's really a dark space and it's just a dark topic to deal with, is that I don't think I have a grasp of the problem yet as it appears. No, I know marami na akong ginama, marami ginagawa na ibang scholars like Jonathan Ong, Nicole Corato, and everyone else doing this information research. Pero I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg. The fact na hidden pa rin yung money that funds this information, for me, is something that I really want to uncover. Kasi, kunyari, ngayon, di ba, sa election, counted dapat technically yung political spending sa regulatory frameworks ng COMELEC. But because it's not counted as political ads, yung mga disinformation apparatus, although that's, you know, campaigning still, hindi siya nabibilang, hindi alam na million-million pa rin ang gastos dito. So I think, parang yung kalaban, kumbaga, we know who's, you know, peddling disinformation ultimately, but we can't prove it kasi wala pa tayong mailabas na evidence. Parang difficult talaga sabihin na, okay, siya yung nagpapakarating disinformation without any proof of like a systemic effort to do this. And you can always deny nga. So I think wala kasing frameworks of accountability, how to deal with this kind of disinformation. So isipin mo yung mga ancient kinds of disinformation kasi disinformation is not really new naman. The thing is, kung may mga newspaper, for instance, na nagkakalat ng information, they should be accountable. Kasi, you know, may ethical framework sila, may standards of, you know, journalistic practice sila. Itong mga to, wala silang sinasanto. Yun talaga yung motivation ko. Hindi ko pa alam talaga yung extent, yung weight, gravity ng problem. So, I think we need to still do a lot of research here. Isa ding hugot ko as a researcher, alam natin na yung Philippines, they're developing state tayo, a lot of these platforms are, you know, based in the States, in you know, even the EU, Australia have a hand in how the platforms operate. I really want us, the Philippines, to have a voice in influencing what the platform policies are. Kasi ultimately, kaya din ang lalaan ng problema ng disinformation in the Philippines is because, you know, the platforms allow these kinds of content to exist. At di na tinitake down ito. Kasi very liberal yung definition nila ng disinformation. Kung borderline lang yan, hindi siya outright denialism, hindi namin tinitake down yan. So may ganong problema tayo. Because we're actually, you know, a technically big country, or have heavy social media users. Yet, politically, we don't have a say on this. I think that's one of the things I also wanna do. So, ang motivation ko, Howie, ay dahil yung problema, andyan pa rin, hindi marin gets paano natin isosolve to. I guess yun yung dahilan. Bakit bumabangon araw-araw at aralin tong problema na to.
Well, mabuti nila. May katulad mo. And we appreciate your time, Fatima. No? Thank you for taking on the challenge of our information crisis. Mahalaga ang serbisyong ginagawa mo. Mabuhay ka, Professor Fatima Gao.
Salamat. Salamat also sa platform na binibigyan niya sa aming mga research.
This episode was produced by the team of Aubrey De Los Reyes and Pau Requesto and edited by J.R. Magdoto with the wonderful people of JMA News and Public Affairs Digital. Thank you, Podmates, for staying until the very end of this podcast. And remember, nakakatalino ang mahabang attention span. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Till the next pod, mabuhay kayo at ingat lagi.